going to tell you live your life openly.
It's all right, it's all right.
Get this out the way. Get this stuff out the way. Carry the message.
My name is Bob, I'm an addict, and I'm excited tonight because I serve a God who creates excitement, and every day in recovery is sweeter than the day before. I thank God for the process, and I praise him for the pain. Pain is discomfort created by disorder, so when I'm in pain, that means something is out of order. But I found out through the 12-step process that pain produces miracles, and pain is a prerequisite for promotion. At the end of my addiction, I was home for 7 years. I had 2 cases in court, and I was boosted to 7 food stamps. Living in random shelter, 6 o'clock wake up, 7 o'clock departure, bought from random son, that's the SOME, so I was my geek, standing that long line, get on the inside of the kitchen egg, black coffee, no sugar, no cream, a hard donut, and a piece of fruit, get on the outside and go to the eviction crew, so I can make $5 eviction, putting people out their houses or their apartments. The 9 times out of 10 was suffering from the same disease I was suffering from, the disease of addiction. A spiritual experience cannot be bought or sold. Every addict must hit bottom before recovery is possible. And the reason why I hit bottom is because I got to a place in my life where I couldn't hit nothing else. I couldn't get a hit when nobody sent me a hit, when nobody let me get a hit on tick. I hit bottom because I couldn't hit nothing else. And the only way an addict can come in recovery after hitting bottom is when you get to the place in your life where you can't hit nothing else. I wish I had some help in here. Y'all like I'm the only one that couldn't get a hit at the end. I hit bottom because I couldn't hit nothing else. So I came in recovery because I asked God to bring me here because I got tired of being on it. I got tired of geeking with no cigarettes. Anybody ever been geeking with no cigarettes? Yeah. Don't act like you forget. I know I ain't the only one. I got tired of geeking with no cigarettes. Couldn't get a hit. Got tired of geeking. Got tired of chasing the ghost. So I came in recovery because I couldn't hit nothing else. So I came in and I met my sponsor, Frankie L. And I met him at his house. Never heard him speak. Never heard him share, but he had something that I wanted. He had a glow on his face, and he had peace in his heart. And I said, I want that. What's your name? Can I get your number? Let's keep in touch. I need you to help me on this journey. So we got to know each other, and I started building a relationship with him, but I had to go through my process on my own. He said, I'm here to help you, but the key to this whole process is humility. There's no defense against humility. Humility will take you anywhere you want to go. There's no defense against humility. It's all the defense in the world against arrogance. The sky's the limit. All you got to do is stay humble, and God will take you anywhere you want to go. But I had to fill the void in the second step. I had to get restored to sanity. And the only way I get restored to sanity, I had to stop chasing residue. I had to stop chasing after things that I thought could fill the void in my life. I had to stop chasing after things that I put in place of God that I thought would fill that hole that was so big. I tried to fill it with clothes. I tried to fill it with cars. I tried to fill it with jewelry. I tried to fill it with women, but couldn't nothing fill that void except the God of my understanding. And it's love that restores us to sanity. That's why when we come in recovery, the first thing we try to do is get in a relationship. Trying to find somebody to love me the only way God can love me. Getting in and out of toxic relationships. Anybody ever been there? Trying to find somebody to touch me where only God can touch me. And I never could find nobody at that toxic stage of my recovery, at that early stage of my recovery, because I was sick, but I didn't need medicine. I needed a miracle. And the only way a recovering addict can get a miracle in their life, you got to believe that God can fill that void just like he got me off the dope. And I don't know about you, but crack cocaine will make you a miracle worker. If you in here today and you smoke crack cocaine, you should be used to miracles. Crack cocaine will make you a miracle worker. Can I get some help? Crack cocaine will make you run into a store and booths and make you think you invisible, hiding behind cameras, counters. Crack cocaine to make you think you invisible. Crack will make you a miracle worker. Dodging bullets, running from the police, jumping over brick walls in a single bound, jumping over fences, jumping over hurdles. Crack cocaine will make you a miracle worker. So I was used to miracles. So I came in and I started seeing coincidence and miracles in my life. I stayed clean. And one day I'm riding with my sponsor. He said, Bob, I'm going to give you the game. He said, God is real. All you got to do is stay humble and know that God is real in your life. So I said, okay, what's my next step? He said, you got to make a decision to turn your will and life over to the care of God as you understand him. And I made a decision because I saw what God was doing in my life at that point. So it wasn't hard to make a decision to turn my will and life over to the care of God. And what God was telling me was, go back to where you came from or go on with the rest of the program. Make a decision. Either go back to the shelter, go back to jail, go back to being a bum, go back to being nothing, go back to being a nobody. Make a decision. Go on with the rest of the program or go back to being nothing. So it wasn't hard to make a decision in the third step. And it's one thing in the basic text in the third step that I really like. It says, we know now that we cannot afford to pause in our spiritual program. And the only reason why people relapse is because they pause. Relapsing will cost you your life if you pause. Pausing will make you die clean. You can walk around here years clean and pause in your spiritual program and be a walking dead man. We cannot afford to pause in our spiritual program. So I made a decision not to pause because I wanted more of what the program had to offer me. And one of the things they told me when I was a newcomer is, you ain't got to get high even if you want to. Now I'm an addict and I like getting high. How in the world I'm gonna not get high even when I want to? And when you're in recovery, you always got cop money. How do you not get high? You got cop money and don't get high. And I live in the projects, dope on every corner. Make a decision to turn your will and life over to the care of God. You ain't got to get high even if you want to. So I made a decision to turn my will and life over to the care of God. And what the third step did for me, the third step killed a whole lot of lies in my life. Because I'm one of them addicts that thought God didn't care nothing about me. I'm one of them addicts that thought God gave up on me. I'm one of them addicts that thought God couldn't reach me because I hit bottom so fast and so hard. But once I made a decision to go in, I started examining myself in the fourth step. And what the fourth step did for me was make me look at myself on a deeper level. It wasn't the drugs. I had to examine myself, childhood, adolescence, and adulthood, so I could see the progression of the disease. So I started looking at myself and I started recognizing the burdens and traps in my life. Trapped by insecurity, fear, and low self-esteem. So I had to get out the trap and see my positive attributes. So I got out the trap and my sponsor said, if you really want to get free, you got to get surgery. Here we go. Surgery of the spirit. I said, ain't nothing wrong with me. I don't need surgery. He said, I ain't talking about that kind of surgery. You need surgery of the spirit. So I said, okay, let's make an appointment. So we found out what was wrong in four, and I had to get it cut out in five. So we made the appointment to get surgery in the fifth step. And I went in and I asked the question, who are you going to get to perform something on you that hands can't touch? How do you perform surgery on somebody with something in them that hands can't touch? He said you need the great physician, not an intern or a resident. You need a chief attending. You need the great physician on this one, Barb. He said, I'm going to be in there with you, but I'm just a surgical assistant. I'm just going to pass some of the instruments. But you need the great physician. So I went in five, got naked, had my first real conversation with another human being in my life, and I found out that I wasn't all that bad. I was just wounded at a young age. All roads lead to home. My mother was an addict. We lived in the projects. My father wasn't there. And I had a whole lot of anger because my mother was on drugs. I had a lot of resentment because my mother was on it. But I was powerless because there wasn't nothing I can do about it. I was taking on somebody else's pain and shame. That wasn't up to me for her to get off dope. And I was in school. I grew up in Southwest Washington, D.C., Greenleaf Housing Projects. Grew up on N Street, next door to a family that always had house parties. They shut the projects down. I moved into a building called 1200 Delaware Avenue. The building had an image. If you said you lived in 1200, people looked at you funny, with awe and surprise, like, what? You live in 1200? And I was like, yeah, I live in 1200, 501. They said, man, I don't know how you can do it. It was a dangerous place. It was like New Jack City in the 70s, 1200 Delaware Avenue. We had a whole lot of nightclubs down Southwest. I played sports, was always in the nightclubs. We had the Mirage, the Chapter 2, the Chapter 3, the East Side, the RSVP, and they had some psychedelic clubs down there if you was into something strange. So I was partying all the time, hung out on the corner, started selling drugs, and the corner lied to me. I saw how it looked, but I couldn't see how it felt. I couldn't see the fear. I couldn't see the anger. I couldn't see the resentments. I couldn't see the hatred. I couldn't see the backstabbing. I couldn't see the snitching. The corner lied to me. I saw how it looked, but I didn't see how it felt. So I got out there, started running with a fast crowd, started getting high because I was trying to escape. And one thing drugs will do for you is get you outside of yourself. And I started hanging around a crowd that didn't care what I looked like. All you had to do was show up and have a desire to destroy your life. So I kept coming back, and more was revealed. Get high by any means necessary. And drugs will help you escape all that misery that you're trying to run from. So I kept coming back. I kept using. And when I came in recovery, they said, being clean is not enough. And I found out why. The only reason why being clean is not enough, because getting high wasn't enough. Getting high wasn't enough to escape the psychological wounds I was going through. The wounds from childhood, the wounds from adolescence, the wounds from early adulthood. Being clean was not enough, because getting high wasn't enough. Anybody ever been there, get high all day, every day, and still can't escape the pain and the scars that can't nobody see but you and God? I was trying to escape psychological wounds. So I examined myself. I had my surgery, and I got free. And sometimes if you get shot, if you don't get the bullet out you, you will get sick from the bullet that's still in your body. The reason why people don't want to do the fifth step is because they're scared to take the bullet out. And sometimes the doctor will scare you, say, well, we take that bullet out, you might get paralyzed, we might stick your heart, we might puncture your liver, but you got to get that bullet out so you can get free from infection. So I got the bullets out in fact, and I got free from infection. So I went into the sixth step, became a Tyler Reddy to have God remove all these defects of character. I couldn't remove them. I tried not doing this, tried not doing that. I tried everything I could not to do the things I was doing because of my character defects. I had a lot of flaws, but my flaws couldn't hinder my flow. My flaws kept me humble while I was flowing. But I still wanted to get free from the scars. I had been healed, but I had some scars. So one day I got home, and I got tired of the scars. And toxic relationships will help you see the scars in your life. Toxic relationships will help you see where the wounds at. Toxic relationships will help you see where you need God more than anything at this point. Because my character defects would drive me into a corner that I might not come out clean. And I was in a lot of corners in my six-step experience. So I got home one night, and I picked up the basic text, and I started reading the six-step, and there's one word in the six-step that gave me some hope. And that one word was eventually. Eventually. Because I was so hopeless in my six-step experience. I couldn't stop doing what I was doing. I was going to meet Sharon, and I couldn't get it off me. And I was like, what's wrong with me? I can't stop doing what I'm doing. I can't break all these bad habits I got. I can't stop being so selfish and self-centered. But when I read the basic text, that one word blessed my life, eventually. That one word gave me some hope, eventually. And I kept reading, and it said perhaps for the first time, you get a vision of our new life. Now the thing that gets me about that is, why does God love me so much that he's willing to show me where I can be while I'm right here messed up like I'm messed up? God loved me so much that he willing to show me where I can be, where I'm already at, messed up with all these defects of character. Why does God show us where we can be so far down the road where we still messed up with all them character defects? And I said, God, why you love me so much? He said, eventually. He said, one thing you got to do, you got to humbly ask me to remove those shortcomings. The only way to get delivered from those shortcomings is to stop trying to deliver yourself. I was trying to do it. Instead of depending on God, I got so far in recovery and I started making some progress that I stopped depending on God and started depending on myself. I didn't even see the seventh step. I was so blind to the seventh step, I never even saw that I had to ask him to remove the shortcomings. And I began to pray, and he started revealing some things to me. He said, you gotta kill the killer that's on the loose. And I said, well, how you kill the killer that's on the loose? He said, you gotta put a contract out on yourself. And the only way you can put a contract out on yourself, you got to ask the hitman, and the hitman is God. So I humbly asked the hitman to kill those things that was killing me and helping me kill everybody. Everybody that came in contact with me, I was killing them. I had to put a contract out on myself. So one day I'm watching this movie called The Mechanic with Charles Bronson. Y'all know Bronson, The Mechanic, a high hitman. And Bronson was so smooth, just like God. And what God would do, just like Bronson, Bronson would examine the person that the hit was on. He will examine the person's life. He will examine their hobbies, their health, and their habits. He would break the man all the way down to a point, and he would take his time, and when he kill him, he make it look like an accident. And that's what God does. In the seventh step, he take those things off of so smooth, it looked like an accident. He take his time. So one day they came to Bronson and they said, we need this hit done fast. And Bronson said, I don't work like that. I'm going to do this one like I always do, slow and smooth. And that's how God is with us. He don't do nothing fast. He get us delivered from those defects nice and smooth. But you got to be willing to put a contract out on yourself. So I asked God to hit me. So he started hitting me. And I started seeing some of those stuff falling off. I stopped cussing folk out. I stopped cussing And I started looking at myself the way God was doing. I said, man, I ain't done that in 3 days. I ain't lying as much. I ain't cheating as much. I ain't gossiping as much. I ain't fussing and fighting as much. I'm doing better on my job. God put a hit on me and delivered me so smooth from so many things. But you got to be willing to put a contract out on yourself. Anybody ever put a contract out on themselves? In a seven step, say this is the road to spiritual growth. And I got on the road to spiritual growth, and I started recognizing the isolation I was in. I didn't have as many friends as I used to have. I started butting heads with people that was on another road. They was on the right track, but they was on the wrong train. I started running into two kinds of people in my seven step experience. I started running into informers and inspirators. Yeah, those are two kinds of people we got in our classes. We have informers, we have intimidators, and we have inspirators. Can I break them down? The intimidators will try to intimidate you with their information. I know the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, the 12 concepts, and the 52 muscles. And they'll grit on you and look like you crazy. They have information, but they don't have no inspiration. And they will try to intimidate you with their clean time, their information, where they go, who they hang out with, their network. The intimidators will try to intimidate you once you get on the road to spiritual growth. Some of them in here now. But I ain't getting off the road, and I'm not going to let you intimidate me with your information. But the funny thing about the intimidators, they are intimidated by the inspirators. When the inspirators show up, the intimidators get busy. There they go, all spiritual and heavy and deep. You spiritual now, overnight. You got close to God. Yeah, man, I'm trying to get my life together because I put a contract out on myself. Don't let the intimidators fool you. Don't let the intimidators scare you. They want what you got, but they don't want to put a contract out on yourself because they too busy hitting everybody else. So I go on the eighth step and start killing the victim syndrome. Because you can't be a victim if you got to make a list of people that you didn't harm. Ain't no victims in the eighth step. And the only reason why I got humble is because I got hit. God hit me so good, knocked me to my knees, I had to look at myself on a deeper level innate. So I made my list, and my grand sponsor said, if you really want to get humble, write down what you did to him. Eighth step say this is the test of our newfound humility. Newfound humility. Because of the transformation that took place in seven, I wasn't the same person when I wrote my eighth step list. I had changed on such a deep level that I was willing to do anything to stay clean. So I made my list. I wrote down what I did to some of them people, and I got real humble because I saw how devastating I was. I saw how reckless I was. I saw how angry and evil I had became. I saw how vicious I was. I saw how menacing I was. Not only before I got here, but since I've been here, I've harmed so many people since I've been in recovery that God had to hit me in seven. I had to get humble. I had to ask him to remove my shortcomings. I had to make a list. I was scared to death. I thought God was going to kill me if I didn't straighten out, if I didn't clean up what I messed up. So I made my list. The ninth step, God set up the circumstance in nine divine confrontations. The confrontation is what kills the reservations. The literature says failure to do this step is reserving a place in our program for relapse. So I start running into some of those people that I harm, and I start recognizing how much I had changed in spite of myself, because the same person that caused the harm cannot be the same person that makes the amends. Transformation had to take place. I couldn't be the same person when I ran into those people. So I started running into them, and they started recognizing that I wasn't the same person. It was miraculous. They said, there's something different about you. You're not the same person. I ran into some people and they didn't even recognize me. They didn't even know it was me. That's how messed up I was when I got here. They couldn't even recognize me. That's how much God had changed me from that same person that was on it all day long. So I started changing. I started meeting people. And there are three phases that we go through in recovery: pity, popularity, and power. At the pity stage, we come in because we're so messed up. We at the pity stage. I didn't have a whole lot of clothes. I was dirty, getting homemade haircuts in the crack house. I was at the pity stage. Didn't have no job, didn't have no skills, didn't have a whole lot. I was at the pity stage. But once I started doing step work and I started sharing, I became popular. And a lot of people relapse at the popularity stage because they confuse popularity with power. You ain't got no power, you just popular. And the popularity stage is where the disease kills us at. Because the popularity stage is a place where sometimes we think we don't need God. We start thinking we can do things on our own. So God had to humble me. And I said, I got to keep looking at myself. 10th step, continue to take a personal inventory. And when you're wrong, promptly admit it. And the only thing I had problems with in the 10th step is promptly. Because I try to manipulate the circumstances. Why I got to apologize to them? They cuss me out. I didn't say nothing wrong to them. Why I got to call them first? Why they ain't got to call me? Why I got to apologize? And then I call my sponsor. And if you got a good sponsor, your sponsor's going to tell you the truth. And I call him up. And he always tell me the same thing. Man, you need to apologize. You need to make the first move. Remember, there's no defense against humility. So I kept looking at myself in 10. I kept examining my life. And the 10th step is so powerful because the 10th step kept me out of the triangle of self-obsession, resentments, anger, and fear. And it's unforgiveness that keeps us locked in the triangle. It's unforgiveness that keeps me in bondage. And once I stopped promptly admitting I was wrong, I got out the triangle. The only way out the triangle is to promptly admit when you're wrong. So I had to put my pride to the side. And my spirit was getting so sensitive, I knew automatically when I harmed somebody. I knew automatically when I made somebody feel bad. I knew automatically when I rubbed somebody the wrong way. I automatically knew when I said something in a meeting that rubbed somebody the wrong way or stepped on somebody's toes or made somebody feel insecure or an addict. I knew automatically when to promptly admit that I was wrong. So I get to the 11th step. And the literature says the stage, the first 10 steps have set the stage. The stage has been set. And a stage is something that we watch people perform on. So in the 11th step, I got to maintain conscious contact so I can have power to perform my purpose. Because I can't perform without his power. That's what the 11th step is all about. I need power to perform. To perform what? My true purpose. But you can't perform without his power. You ever try to perform without the power of God in your life? I was trying to perform without his power, but the 11th step said, sometimes you got to go through another struggle and another surrender. I kept taking some hits in the 11th step, and until I got knocked back to my knees, I had to continue to ask him to give me his presence, to let me see what he wanted me to do. The 11th step talking about asking God for my true purpose in life, my true will, my true goals, my true purpose. It wasn't just about coming in recovery and not using and going to meetings all the time. You got to get ready to do something. You got to get ready to represent the God of your understanding with what God put in you when you was a child. Because the disease of addiction was trying to kill the gifts that God gave me. So the 11th step says, get in a quiet place so you can see who you really are. So you can see what your true gifts are. So you can see what your true attributes are. So you can see what your strengths and weaknesses are. You got to get ready to do what God calling you to do. He didn't bring you in recovery for nothing. So one day, I thought I was ready. I had about 4 years clean. I was sharing in this and that place. And I went over St. Louis to a speaker's jam, and I left the speaker's jam and got on the subway. And when I got to the subway, it's a man standing on the edge of the tracks. And the lady in the bubble saying, "Sir, step off the gray area." The lights blinking. The lady in the bubble saying, "Sir, step off the gray area." He had a trash bag by his feet. Y'all know the look. He looked like he just got put out of where he was living. And he's standing on the edge of the tracks. I'm about 20 feet away from him. And God telling me, "Say something to him." I'm sharing over here, sharing over there. I thought I was ready. God said, "You want to share? You want to say something? The man on the edge of the tracks, say something to him." The lights blinking, the train coming. The lady in the bubble saying, "Sir, step back off the 8th gray area." The train come, he stepped back and he jumped. And the train cut him in half. And all God was trying to tell me to do was say something. And what I found out was God was telling me it wasn't you that was talking to him. It was going to be me speaking through you to him. But you was worrying about yourself. You ain't ready. I thought I was ready. You're not ready, son, because you're still worrying about yourself. A spiritual experience cannot be bought or sold if you're still worried about yourself. Selfless service means I ain't worried about myself. And I'm willing to do whatever God say to save somebody's life. God can't use you worrying about yourself. So I had to reflect back on my childhood. All roads lead to home. Before I would go out somewhere with my mother, she would say, "Come here, boy. Let me see how you look. Are you ready?" And in my prayer and arrogance, I said, "Yeah, mama, I'm ready." And I would go to her, and she said, "Boy, you ain't ready. Look at your hair. Look how you got your pants. Look at your shirt. Look at that stuff in your eye. You know how your mother stick her finger in your eye and get that stuff out your eye." I'm like, "Mom, why are you spitting on me?" She said, "I'm trying to get you ready." I always thought I was ready. And what she said was, "When you get out of here, when you leave out the house, you're not representing you. You represent me. You got to be ready." And that's what God's telling us in the 11th step. You represent me. So when I send you out there to do my will, you got to represent me, but you got to be ready. So 6 years ago, I had a dream. I was so close to God. And you know what God say, eyes have not seen and ears have not heard. When I got close to him, I started having dreams and visions. And the 11th step says perhaps we get a glimpse. Sometimes you get a glimpse. The difference between a vision and a glimpse is a look within. A vision is an outward look. A glimpse is a look within. A vision is an observation. A glimpse is a revelation. So I needed a glimpse in the 11th step. And when you get an 11th step and you get so close to God, you got that conscious contact, God will give you a glimpse, an intimate look, not only where you are, but where you can be. And in the 11th step, the only thing that keeps us from relapsing is a glimpse. Yeah, I needed a glimpse. And Helen Keller was a deaf and blind school teacher. And they interviewed Helen Keller and they said, "Helen, is there anything in the world worse than being blind?" Helen said, "The only thing in this world that's worse than being blind is having sight with no vision." Yeah, having sight with no vision. So I'm in D.C. I have a dream about 6 years ago. I had a dream that I had a white Rolls Royce. And I know the intimidators think I'm lying, but that's all right. And I tell my sponsor about the dream, and I tell it to him so vividly like it was yesterday. And it wasn't as big as a phantom, it was small, and I couldn't understand it. And I said, it's white, it's four doors, it ain't as big as a phantom. He said, you sure it wasn't a Bentley? I said, nah, it was a Rolls Royce, but it wasn't a phantom. So this year in February, I found out what it was. It was what they call a ghost. So I go to the car show, and they had what is called the extended ghost. It means the back seat is a little longer so you can have leg room. They got a regular ghost and extended ghost for leg room. And they had a white one just like the one in my dream. And I'm standing there, and I'm talking to the man that's representing Rolls Royce. He may have been an Englishman or something from overseas. And I'm talking to the man. We're just talking. I'm asking him about the car. And I didn't have on nothing special that day. I had on a sweater and some jeans. And I'm just talking to the man. And the man, he didn't even ask me. He commanded me. Because they don't let people in them cars. You know, the Lamborghinis, the Ferraris, the Rolls Royce, they got those cars roped off. You can't get them. So I'm talking to the man. And he said, step over the rope and get in the ghost. And I said, okay, God, what are you saying? He said, step over the rope and get in the ghost. So I got in the car, I got in the back seat. Because when I get one, I ain't driving. I'm sitting in the back. But I need a glimpse. So I got a glimpse. I got an intimate look at the ghost. So I'm sitting back there. I'm asking them questions. What's this for? What's that for? And the back seat is so comfortable. I feel like it's sitting on a couch. And it got a flap in the back. I said, what's this for? He said, that's for taking notes. Or for your laptop. And I'm just in there. And I'm filled with the Spirit, tears running down my face. I said, oh, God, God, I see you. I hear you talking. Thank you for the glimpse. And the power to carry out his will, it ain't about material things. It's about the assignments that's going to bring the material things. The 11th step is about revealing the will, the work, the assignment that God going to put you on. So I got a glimpse. And what God revealed to me about the rope was this. What the man was telling me was, step over what's stopping you from getting in your destiny. Step over what's stopping you from getting in your purpose. Step over what's stopping you from getting in God's will. Step over the rope and get in the ghost. Step over resentments. Step over anger. Step over toxic relationships. Step over what's stopping you from getting in your destiny. Step over the rope and get in the ghost, man. God don't ask us, he commands us. Step over the rope and get in the ghost. I wish I had some help in here. Step over what's stopping you from getting in your destiny. But you can't be scared to step over the rope. You can't be scared of security. You can't be scared of the door watchers. Step over the rope and get in the ghost. So I step over the rope. I get in the ghost. And I start looking at them things in my life that was holding me back, even in my 11 step experience. And God started telling me, you got to stop doing this. You got to stop doing that. That's a rope. 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 Step over the rope and get in your destiny. So one day, I asked God, what you want me to do now? He said, you ain't even started yet. The 12th step is not the end, it's just the beginning. So I'm on Florida Avenue. I'm saying, I'm doing what God called me to do. I'm reaping the benefits of the program. I'm doing everything that I possibly can so nobody else won't jump off the track on me. I'm doing everything I can, running into this, running into that, doing things that God want me to do. I'm preaching that detox. I'm preaching the needle out their arm and the pipe out their mouth. But God said, you still ain't started yet. Because you got too many ropes in your life. So I said, well, what is it that I'm lacking? So I'm on Florida Avenue, they got a flea market, and I walk in there, and a man got a stand, he's selling books, and I pick up this book for $2. The name of the book is called Let the Trumpet Sound. Story, autobiography, Martin Luther King. And I'm reading the book, and I get to the place in history where they're having the bus boycott. And they riding up the street on a hot summer day, and it's an old lady walking up the road. And they pull over with some room in the car. And Dr. King asked the lady, ma'am, get in the car, you can ride with us. She said, no, thank you. I'm all right. I don't mind walking. And he said, but you don't have to walk. It's kind of dangerous out here. There's plenty of room. We got air conditioner. You can ride with us. You don't have to walk. And she said, son, it's okay. I'd rather walk. So Dr. King said, why would you rather walk when you can ride with us in comfort and in luxury and in air conditioner? And a spiritual experience cannot be bought or sold. This is what she said. She said, son, I'm walking because I ain't walking for me. I'm walking for my children and my grandchildren. My name Bob. I'm an addict. I'm from Washington, D.C. A spiritual experience cannot be bought or sold. You got to walk because you ain't walking for you. You walking for somebody else. Thanks for letting me share. God bless.